You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeter. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeter.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeter.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Monday, December 7th, 2015. I'm Michael Brooks. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On today's program, Hillary Matfress, a security analyst at the Center for Complex Operations, will discuss Nigeria's oil curse, why the discovery of more oil fields in that country is not a boon for its security or economy. Plus, President Obama announces a new strategy on terrorism and ISIL. Well, not really. It's more of the same, but everybody needed to hear an address, apparently, in his role as comforter and chief. We're going to break down what he said, what his views on terrorism are, and how they contrast with the Republican field and the great American meltdown after the horrors in San Bernardino last week. Plus, the Justice Department is investigating Chicago. Possible cover-up, systemic police abuse. Look out, Rahm Emanuel. If that's an actual investigation, that is not good news for you. Plus, Republicans said a lot of dumb things over the weekend, and Matt got sound of them saying it. And I have an attitude and the Jon Stewart style snarkiness to respond to it. It's a whole cottage industry that Sam is one of the first people that started, actually, going back to 2004 when people like Sam and Jon Stewart and other people started clipping Republicans saying dumb things and responding to them. And I'll follow in that tradition on the fun half of the program today. You can bring me down. How are you guys doing? Matt?
I am energized.
You sound energized.
Yeah, I did a bit of a deep dive into the Ted Cruz videos. So hopefully we'll have more of that stuff.
We're going to do a lot with those videos. Miss Kelly?
I am okay.
You okay?
Yeah.
All right. Very calm vibe in the office today. Before we get to Hillary Matfress, let me tell you about today's sponsors. Everybody knows that I love Harry's. It's the best thing you can do as far as shaving goes. And if you're watching this on YouTube, you can see that I'm relatively freshly shaven. I shaved yesterday. And look, we're in the holiday gift-giving season. And we know how stressful it is to find gifts. You got to find not only the right gifts, but the right gifts for a whole lot of people, for family, for friends. And Harry's is a no-brainer for anybody that has shaving needs in your life. And that's pretty much everybody. Everybody has some sort of shaving need. And everybody are going to... There's not a single person who's not going to love Harry's razors. Now, let me tell you about my experience with Harry's. The blades are fantastic. There's no complicated multi-blade nonsense. It's just a smooth, clean shave. Everything looks great. It comes in a kit, which actually looks really nice, and it makes it easier to travel with. So if you go around places, I guess you can't take it on a plane, obviously, but if you're going on a train or a bus, you can throw it in there, take them wherever you're going. And I have really sensitive skin, and I find that shaving with the Harry's razors and the cream, I prefer the cream to the foam, it just does a fantastic job. It's terrific. It's so good it makes me talk like Donald Trump. And this holiday season, Harry's has something for every guy out there, every person, whether it's a single Santa for your office colleague or the guy who's seemingly impossible to shop for, Matt. And don't forget yourself. I don't know what I'll get you, Matt. You seem like the type of guy who's impossible to shop for. Are you impossible to shop for?
Yeah, it was my birthday this weekend, and I barely got any gifts, and I assume that must be the reason.
That is so... You just broke this live read with the saddest news I've heard in ages, man. Well, we'll correct that with some Harry's for you, okay? Okay, holiday shaving sets all start at different price points, starting at $15. And as a special offer for Majority Report listeners, Harry's will give you $5 off of your first purchase when you go to harrys.com and enter promo code Majority Report. Harry's not only makes its own really high quality grooming products, they also give 1% of their sales and 1% of their time back to the communities they serve. So you can feel good about a gift that gives back. Finding the perfect gifts from Harry's couldn't be easier and doesn't involve any frustrating shopping trips. Harry's.com is streamlined and easy to use. It takes less than 30 seconds to place an order. And that's really true. Great customer service experience to support your purchase. And until tomorrow, December 8th, go to Harry's.com right now. And as a special offer for Majority Report fans, Harry's will give you five off of your first order. That's $5 off of your first order with code Majority Report. Don't wait. Free shipping for the holidays ends on December 10th. December 10th. So act now. That's Harry's.com. Harry's.com. Enter promo code Majority Report. Harry's makes every morning feel like a holiday. Go to Harry's right now. And from December 9th to December 15th, you can go to Harry's and, enter promo code Majority. Don't wait. Economy shipping for the holidays ends on December 18th, but free shipping until December 10th. So act now. Harry's.com, promo code Majority Report. Harry's makes every morning feel like a holiday. And if you run a small business, or really any business, you know that hiring quality people is what makes or breaks any operation. And today's sponsor, ZipRecruiter, is here to help you make that process a whole lot easier. If you're hiring but not sure where to find the best candidate, any business owner can tell you that your company is only as good as the people you hire. And I can also tell you that posting your job in one place just isn't enough to find quality candidates. I mean, it helped on this show because literally we can broadcast it that we're looking for people. But it's you can never rely on one thing. We posted in many different places and found the right people through references and other different kind of synchronicities. ZipRecruiter makes that a centralized and easy process. And there's no, and so when you're short in staff and there's no time to deal with a dozen different job sites, you can go to ZipRecruiter. Thanks to ZipRecruiter, you can post to up to 100 job sites with just a single click and be instantly matched to candidates with over 6 million resumes. Just post once, and within 24 hours, watch your candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. ZipRecruiter has been used by over 400,000 businesses, and you can try it right now for free. Getting the right people for your company is important. Try ZipRecruiter to get your perfect candidate before they go to somebody else. Today, try ZipRecruiter for free. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/majority. That's ZipRecruiter.com/majority. And once again, ZipRecruiter.com/majority. Find the best people in an incredibly easy and effective way. Links to Harry's and ZipRecruiter are both on the Majority.fm website. We'll be right back with Hillary Matfis to talk about Nigeria's oil curse.
All's my life I has to fight. All's my life I Hard times like, yeah. Bad trips like, yeah. Nazareth, I'm f***ed up, homie, you f***ed up. But if God got us, then we gon' be all right. And when I wake up, I recognize you looking at me for the pay cut. Bahamas, I be looking at you from the face down. One Mac 11, even room with the face down. Skimming, and let me tell you about my life. Painkillers only put me in a twilight. We're pretty Benjamin is the highlight. I tell my mama I love her, but this what I like. Lord knows, 20 of them in my Chevy. Tell them all to come and get me, reaping everything I sow. So my karma come in heaven, no preliminary hearings on my record. I'm a f***ing gangster in silence for the record. Tell the world I know it's too late. Boys and girls, I think I've gone crazy. Trying to side my vices all day. Won't you please believe when I say, when you know we've been hurt, been down before. When our pride was low, looking at the world like, where do we go? And we hate po-po, wanna kill us dead in the street for sure. I'm at the preacher's door, my knees getting weak and my gun might blow, but we gon' be alright. Right.
We gon' be alright. We gon' be alright. We gon' be alright. Do you hear me? Do you feel me?
Welcome back to the Majority Report. I'm Michael Brooks. Joining us now is Hillary Matfis. She is a research analyst at the National Defense University's Center for Complex Operations. And today, speaking on her own behalf, she has a recent article in Al Jazeera America called Nigeria's Oil Curse. The discovery of more petroleum reserves will impede regional efforts to squash Boko Haram. Hillary, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
It's my pleasure. So you start your article off by noting that in November 8th, the head of Nigeria's National Petroleum Corporation announced that Nigeria was on the verge of a major new oil discovery in the Lake of Chad area after years of failed exploration efforts. And I guess from one angle, oil prices globally have been dropping. Nigeria's economy has slowed significantly in the past year. This would seem like good news. I mean, not from an environmental standpoint, clearly, but maybe from an economic one. You say it's not. Start us off by explaining why.
Right. So putting aside the environmental concerns that a discovery of this size implies, when you look at the of natural resource-based wealth and the economies that develop around it, there are sort of structural problems associated with oil wealth to begin with, not even considering the regional context under which such exploration would have to take place. So Michael Ross has done really interesting work about how the very nature of petroleum extraction itself creates the sort of structural economies that aren't conducive to good governance, to democracy, to gender equity, or to development in general. And in Nigeria in particular, we've seen oil development create stark inequalities. We've seen it fuel corruption and create a really inefficient and at times unaccountable state. And for anyone that's interested in learning more about that specifically and sort of the history of Nigerian oil wealth mismanagement, I would suggest that they look at the Natural Resource Governance Initiative, who just this summer put out a really fantastic report detailing the Nigerian National Petroleum Corporation's lack of transparency and some of their mismanagement. But getting to the details of this discovery itself, at this moment, we're seeing discussions and cooperation between Niger, Chad, Cameroon, and Nigeria about ways to confront the Boko Haram insurgency, which is, at this point, the most lethal insurgency on the greatest challenge that Nigeria has faced since its transition to democracy in 1999, and one of the most lethal terrorist groups globally.
Mm-hmm.
If you start to develop the petroleum industry in that area, you're inevitably going to run into some legal debates over whose land the oil is actually in. And so Nigeria and Chad have actually fought border skirmishes over in the 1970s, and there's still competing claims about ownership of several islands within Lake Chad itself.
So
when you add in, I'm sorry.
Just to pause for a minute, because I do, this regional security component is obviously a really important part of your argument. We'll get to that in a second. Before we get there, would you elaborate a little bit more on, even beyond Nigeria, this idea of the resource curse? That why is it that so many countries, whether it's in sub-Saharan Africa or the Middle East or elsewhere, that have this tremendous oil wealth, it does seem to never really produce broad, or very, very rarely produce broad societal dividends? And it does seem to fuel corruption. It does seem to fuel stagnation. What is the notion that it's the petroleum itself that feeds those kind of problems? Can you kind of anchor us in that resource curse idea of oil? And then we'll go back to the challenge of Nigeria and Chad and coordinating against Boko Haram.
Absolutely. So one of the most interesting phenomena that we see when we examine countries that base a significant proportion of their economy or their GDP on natural resource exports, minerals, petroleum, is something called Dutch disease. Dutch disease is what happens when a huge inflow of foreign currency creates an appreciation of the domestic currency. And so without sounding too much like an economics professor, when a currency appreciates, it becomes more expensive to buy other goods from that country. And so it becomes more difficult for the economy to diversify beyond anything other than that initial natural resource that had prompted the inflow of foreign reserves.
So to give, just to put a concrete example of it, and I think this is right, it's always a funny example, that in Iran, after oil, the second biggest export is pistachios, I think. So that kind of like plummeting down of this major international commodity to, you know, pistachios. Is that the sort of thing you're talking about?
Right. Yeah. A little bit. That's on point. In that these economies have difficulty finding other outlets, finding
right.
other industries to invest in, simply because those industries might exist. So let's say you have a country who has two economies. Let's say it's diamond exports and cars.
Mm-hmm.
As they export more diamonds and their currency appreciates, it becomes more expensive to buy their cars. Their cars become less competitive on the international economic marketplace, and that industry starts to fail. Naturally, more resources are then devoted to the diamond industry in this made-up economy, and the diamond industry becomes more and more central until you've crowded out a number of other industries. And obviously, that has ramifications for the economy because as you specialize, you're more subjected to the variability of price shocks.
Right.
And especially with something like oil, as you touched on in the beginning, the global price of oil right now is at sort of historic lows, and we see a lot of human suffering and economic insecurity as a result of that, and having economies that are so centrally focused on petroleum.
Right. Okay, so that's very helpful for situating it. Now let's get to a couple of more of the specifics with Nigeria. The first thing that you got to in your article and you were about to speak to is that, you know, Boko Haram now, people, and I think people would know, so many people would know, is not just a Nigeria-specific problem. They're conducting attacks and operations in Chad. This is a regional security challenge. So what you're saying, and that brings us back to the discovery of petroleum reserves in the Lake of Chad Basin, which is it sort of potentially reignites conflicts between Nigeria and Chad about where this oil actually is and who actually gets it, right at the moment that cooperation between Nigeria and Chad are essential in confronting Boko Haram.
Right, absolutely. It just adds sort of a layer of diplomatic wrangling that is ultimately counterproductive, particularly when you consider that relations between Chad and Nigeria are not particularly warm and fuzzy at this moment. Chad has arguably the strongest military of the coalition against Boko Haram, but has been kind of poking fun in some official statements at the weakness of the Nigerian military. Some of the statements in the winter were kind of discussing how the Chadian military wouldn't run like the Nigerians after a few reports of soldiers going AWOL or fleeing, that they would take out the terrorists with the bumpers of their jeeps or their tanks. So there was a little bit of thawing in that relationship, but it's certainly not one that can withstand pressures that delineating claims over a potentially valuable oil discovery would place on them at present.
So that's interesting, just to take that for a moment. I think most people know of Nigeria as really incredibly kind of an African power, culturally, economically, in terms of its size, and historically. I mean, obviously in Nigeria, the relationship with the military to, the people and the populace and military dictatorships and Western support for military dictatorships has been really problematic, to say the least. So I think it would be surprising to people to hear that Chad, that has a relatively lower profile, actually has a much more strong and effective military than Nigeria. Is that, that's really true?
It is. Yeah. The Nigerian military has been sort of on the back burner since the transition of democracy in 1999. It's really been allowed to kind of degrade. And it's understandable when you consider Nigeria's history of military dictatorships that democratic governments would not necessarily be enthusiastic about investing more in the military. But this touches on kind of my new personal soapbox, which is the United States and a lot of other Western powers have turned to Chad as a military powerhouse. And Chad does have a very strong military. But what we're so keen to overlook is, one, the fact that Idriss Deby is not necessarily a shining example of a Democrat.
That's the leader of Chad, just so everybody knows.
The president.
The president of Chad. Okay, go ahead.
And he's been in power for quite some time now, and he's survived multiple coup attempts. But this military might has only been enabled by Chadian oil wealth, and the Chad-Cameroonian oil, which was developed about a decade ago, was the largest infrastructure project in African history. It was backed by the United States. It was backed by the World Bank, by the IMF, and it was supposed to be a model for petroleum exploration, development, and pipeline construction. They consulted with a number of anthropologists, environmentalists, to make sure that this would be sort of the least damaging means of developing the industry. And created certain legal constraints on how the money should be spent to ensure community development. And almost immediately, President Idriss Deby broke the terms of the agreement, and eventually the United States and the World Bank had to withdraw from the project because the Chadian government was just not living up to its promises that were mandated under the terms of the contract.
But is it correct that after, even though the World Bank and the United States withdrew, I believe it was Exxon, who was the prime kind of oil company in Chad, and correct me if I'm wrong, remained, and that sort of partnership, at least on the from an Exxon to Chad sort of bilateral relationship, independently of the U.S. or the World Bank, endures?
I'm not sure if it's Exxon. I would have to look that up. Yeah. But absolutely, the private industry stayed in Chad, and Chad made actually more money than the initial projections by the World Bank and the IMF suggested that they would, because of sort of historically high oil prices at the time. So yes, the private sector stayed in Chad, except for the one company that was kicked out by the Chadian government.
Okay, so this sort of leads us back again to a point that you're also hitting in your article, which is that in some respects, and of course, this in no way mitigates the threat and the, you know, to an African security and the horrific humanitarian toll of Boko Haram, But it's a familiar narrative where, you know, Western partners team up with governments that have, you know, problematic human rights records, to say the least, and partner with them in ways that seem very short-sighted, potentially appealing in the present, maybe sometimes even needed in the present, but short-sighted in the long term in terms of the actual sustainability of these situations. And you connect that with the historical role of insurgencies in Nigeria built around petroleum in that country. I think a lot of people that listen to this show will have a sense of, you know, groups that, regardless of what one thinks of them, are quite dissimilar to Boko Haram, who operated in the Niger Delta, some of whom seem to have some pretty, you know, very legitimate claims about the abuses of international oil companies, the abuses of the Nigerian government. We know the Nigerian activist who was hung by in the mid-90s by the military dictator at that time. Is Boko Haram tapping into, both as a source of revenue, the oil business, but also tapping into some of the legitimate grievances that local populations and the population at large of Nigeria have about corruption and exploitation in the oil industry?
So looking into Boko Haram's financing is difficult. We can say with relative certainty that they're not deriving any wealth at present from petroleum extraction. Just geographically, they're not right. placed to do so. Mm-hmm. But in terms of tapping into local grievances, absolutely. In my work with the Nigeria Social Violence Project at Johns Hopkins University, SICE, we've published fairly aggressively about how the genesis of Boko Haram was tapping into local grievances and local political arrangements. If you look at some of the development statistics about northeastern Nigeria, it's the most underdeveloped, oftentimes the least educated, least employed portion of the country. And even if you look into some of Boko Haram's propaganda, they often emphasize the predations of the Nigerian state. And so we've only actually seen the acceleration in Boko Haram's lethality following the 2009 crackdown by the Nigerian government against the insurgents, in which they killed an estimated 700 people, including the group's founder, Muhammad Yusuf.
Right.
But it was done in a really extrajudicial, heavy-handed, and it really riled the local population. And when the group reemerged under Abubakar Shekau in mid-2010, it came out swinging with now nationwide grievances against the federal government, and with propaganda that really highlighted the abuses perpetrated by the Nigerian military, by the Nigerian police, and sort of the horrors of being held in a Nigerian prison. And for people that are interested in a less ideologically slanted, more empirically grounded review of that, I would suggest that they look at Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International's detailing of some of the extrajudicial executions and torture that are committed by the Nigerian police and military.
Right. In this, and that's the, so it's very important to note. I'm glad you did that, because, you know, there is this notion, and I think we see it in broader conversations, that this sort of toxic, evil, sort of lethal ideology comes out of a vacuum or just simply ideological or theological resources. And obviously, explaining the context in no way justifies in any way, shape, or form the barbarism and horrific cruelty of a group like Boko Haram. But there is always a political and economic context. Getting to the political and economic context, Nigeria had a presidential election last year, I believe, or maybe actually, in fact, earlier this year in 2015, earlier this year, where we saw the replacement of a Christian president, Goodluck Jonathan, with a Muslim president, Muhammadu Buhari, who was, in fact, a military dictator in the 1980s and has a lot of very disturbing things on his record, including, I think, actually, some people would know a sort of personal attack on Fela Kuti, who I know a lot of members of this audience like, the musician. In his current iteration as president, it seemed that there was that part of the argument was that as a Muslim, he might be able to speak to some of the issues you're talking about more marginalized parts of the country. And he also said that he would aggressively stamp out and take on corruption. As we move towards wrapping this conversation up, How is that going?
So President Buhari had a nickname, Baba Go Slow, because of his sort of slow-moving approach to governing. In fact, it was only about a month
That's
ago.
That's what I call my boss. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Yeah. I'm sure they're happy to hear that.
Yeah.
So Baba Go Slow just finally appointed his cabinet ministers. I will say that the anti-corruption endeavor has moved a lot quicker than some of his other promised initiatives, including economic diversification. And so we've seen the arrest of Samba Dasuki, who is a former national security advisor to the previous administration, on charges of corruption. We've seen a more aggressive push towards anti-corruption endeavors, but unfortunately we haven't seen much effectiveness in slowing the Boko Haram insurgency. In fact, I just updated the data set that we collect at the Nigeria Social Violence Project, which seeks to catalog every incident of lethal social violence in Nigeria during the Fourth Republic. And I compared the time period between Muhammadu Buhari's swearing in as president in spring of this year and present, and the same time period last year under President Goodluck Jonathan. And the total number of deaths is roughly equal, but what we've seen is that the group has just kind of spread. So under Goodluck Jonathan, during the time period I compared, there were no recorded or reported attacks outside of Nigeria's borders. Under President Buhari, the group is just as lethal, but we've seen a spread to Chad, Niger, and Cameroon, which is problematic, especially when you have states that have not shown a capacity to really cooperate militarily in a regional stability effort.
Well, Hillary Matfis, we'll have to leave it there. I really, really appreciate your time. The article is Nigeria's Oil Curse. It's at Al Jazeera America Opinion. We have it linked to our website at majority.fm. I really appreciate your time, Hillary. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
You too. Okay, everybody. We are going to head into the fun half, where you can join us at 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. The IMs are on. We've got sound from President Obama's address last night on ISIS, ISIL, Daesh, whatever you want to call it. We'll be going over that. The Justice Department is going to investigate Chicago as a result of the Laquan McDonald killing. Loretta Lynch, Attorney General Loretta Lynch, announced that this morning. We'll touch on that briefly. We've got some, you know, ludicrous sound from Jeb Bush. I'll try to get to that because, as Matt pointed out this morning, he might not be around that much longer. And we would like to make fun of his low energy for as long as possible. Become a member of the Majority Report today. That's how this show works. That's how this show happens. You all make it possible. That's still where a vast majority of our revenue comes from, even though we've had some increased advertising. And it fluctuates. I think in the next couple of days, we're not going to have as many ads. So, you know, that's a big help. And, of course, as a member, you don't have to deal with the ads unless you're listening live. We cut them out of the members show. But we still rely fundamentally on you to become a member. It's less than a cup of coffee a day. It makes this show, it makes every part of the show possible. Go to majority.fm/become a member. It's incredibly easy. And, you know, if you have any problems or any questions or anything, you can always email us at majorityreporters@gmail.com. We'll get back to you fast. Work out whatever it is as fast as we can. But become a member today. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Even if you're a member and you get the member feed, you could still subscribe to us on iTunes. That helps us with the rankings, and that's really incredibly great for the show and exposing new people to it. Write us a review on iTunes. That's also incredibly helpful. JustCoffee.coop, win-win-win, fair trade, tea, coffee, and chocolate. Get the Majority Report blend. And it's Amazon season. It's holiday shopping season. I know a lot of you are using Amazon. I know some of you don't. I totally respect that, but a lot of you are. And if you do, use our link. Go to I think it's majorityreport.com/kickback. If that's correct. If not, you can just go to majority.fm, scroll to the bottom of the page, and click on our Amazon link. And that way you can do your shopping through our link, and we'll get a few pennies off of Jeff Bezos, and every penny counts because we're an insurgency too. All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening. See members on the flip side.